On this episode of a DFA podcast, we talk about the Yu Darvish signing, and we get wildly off the rails with a bunch of rosterbation. It's a DFA podcast, and it's coming at you right now.
Episode 50 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me once again, RJ Anderson of CBS Sports. RJ, this is it. This is our moment. This is the moment we've been waiting for. Episode 50, and we can finally talk about a top-tier free agent signing.
Yeah, we had something special planned for episode 50, and then I guaranteed that, watch, everyone will sign this weekend before we can get it out, and naturally someone did sign. It was the top free agent starting pitcher.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of think that this is interesting because he's probably not just the top free agent starting pitcher of this year, but he's probably the best free agent starting pitcher to be available on the open market since, I don't know, maybe Max Scherzer. There's probably not going to be somebody better than him next year. It's Yu Darvish finally signing, and we're just going to have an episode entirely devoted to Yu Darvish. We're going to just ignore, for now, the minor moves and the even deeper minor moves that have happened in the last couple of days, and we're just going to talk Darvish. So how does that sound?
That sounds like a very good idea after last episode with our 20 to 25 man roster of non-roster invitees. So
yeah, there's only so much Jeff Manship that the podcast listener can handle. So we'll talk about Darvish. First, we'll set the scene. Darvish signs a 6-year, $126 million contract with the Chicago Cubs. It includes a no-trade clause that kind of passes over time. We don't know the specifics, I don't think, yet, but it's a full no-trade, and then it becomes a limited no-trade at some point. He also has an opt-out after 2019. So 2 years into the deal, there's an opt-out, which is kind of interesting, and I think we can talk about that a little bit later. But let's just go with some initial thoughts on Darvish and the Cubs, and how do you like this move?
Well, my initial thought was it's about time, because it feels like we've been waiting on the Darvish ship to fall literally all winter long, and now hopefully, you know, some more of the market will get going, on at least on the pitching side, because it seems like we've been talking about Darvish and where he'll land, and then we skip to, you know, the second or the third tier of Lance Lynn and Alex Cobb, and we don't even really talk about Jake Arrieta and where he might go, and he's probably the second best starting pitcher available, or has been all winter long. I think you can probably deem him the best now. So yeah, it's kind of a relief that he finally signed somewhere. And, you know, I think we'd all kind of expected the Cubs to be one of the two or three teams who were most likely to land Darvish, with the Dodgers and, you know, maybe the Twins or the Brewers, depending on how you feel about their chances, or maybe the Yankees if you thought they would get, you know, aggressive all of a sudden and go after him. So it kind of feels like it was a fait accompli that eventually he would sign with the Cubs or one of those two or three teams. And it's nice to have happen. I also, my ever not reaction was, wow, that's all it took, because it feels like a fairly cheap deal. And granted, the opt-out changes the dynamic a little bit, but you could have told me that he would have signed for one fewer year at the same amount, and I would have believed it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. This as a, in terms of average annual value, it looks a little bit lower than I would have expected. You know, I kind of brushed over David Price and his signing recently, but Darvish seems like the quality and the capability of pitcher to get something closer to $30 million a season. Kind of like you've seen for contracts in Price and the Scherzer kind of grouping. I think maybe some of this has to do with our collusion market, or whatever we're going to refer to it as, the fact that all prices seem to be driven down this offseason. But maybe some of it also has to do with some of the perks that came in with the contract. I think that the opt-out clause after 2 years is really interesting in this particular case, because, I mean, you know, in 2 years, we could very well have a situation where teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees are no longer playing in this luxury tax, like gotta stay under the cap limit market. And maybe that means that if Darvish has a couple of good seasons, he could be looking at an even bigger payday when he's going into his age, I believe, 33 season after 2019. What do you think?
No, I think that's a good point. Of course, we could also be looking at a labor stoppage or something down the road. So
Well, that's true.
there's certainly some risk there. I do want to introduce the incentives too that are based on winning multiple Cy Young awards, and those seem about as unattainable as possible,
Yeah.
given that you have to win multiple ones to reach it. So this very much is a deal where the reported amount is probably the true amount. And just to touch back on the opt-out, I always struggle with this because I know there's a school of thought out there that says that these opt-outs put all the risk and all the leverage on the teams. And I know there's a school of thought out there that says that these put all the leverage on the players. So I wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think opt-outs are generally good for the team or good for the player?
I don't think there is any circumstance where an opt-out is good for the team. To me, the opt-out is always good for the player. The only cases where an opt-out to me could possibly be good for a team is if a team drastically wants to cut payroll at some point. So if you're in a Miami Marlins kind of situation and you desperately need to cut payroll to the amount that you're willing to sacrifice one of your team's best players in order to do so for basically nothing in return. To me, that's the only way that an opt-out is useful for a team. And so in the case of the Cubs and Yu Darvish, I don't see any way in this opt-out is anything other than a benefit for Darvish and a negative for the Cubs, which is fine. I've got no personal love for the Cubs and their front office more so than any other team. I think that if Darvish has two great seasons, he wins one of those Cy Young awards, does well in the voting in another one, I would love to see him hit the market again, get paid, and whether that's returning to the Cubs or moving on to a different place.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I generally agree with that. I guess the counter argument here would be that Darvish, he has a fair amount of mileage on his arm already. He's already underwent a Tommy John surgery. And, he's probably going to throw, shoot, there's a chance he throws 400 innings over the next 2 seasons. They're probably going to be high quality. And frankly, if he opts out after that because of the high level of performance, you probably are okay with that because, the mileage on his arm at that point will be so significant that he's probably going to decline after that point. And I don't know, maybe that's a cynical point of view. It's a little bit morbid, honestly, because you're kind of counting the ticks on the clock before his arm potentially, blows up again. But yeah, for the most part, I agree that, Darvish, I guess I would say he's an interesting case study in recency bias and things like that, because for a while there, I think we all agreed he was an ace. And this season didn't really pitch great with Texas in terms of ERA. Went to Los Angeles, posted a strikeout to walk ratio that would have been a career high over a full season. I mean, this is the guy who literally leads all starting pitchers in history of strikeout rate. And his strikeout rate jumped to over 11 again. And, he was fine in the regular season with the Dodgers, had a 1.22 ERA plus. His career number, by the way, is 1.26, so basically right in line there. And then the postseason rolled around, and he was absolutely horrible in the World Series. There were pitch tipping allegations for the second time against him in the past year. Supposedly, when he would take the ball from his hip to his glove, if he didn't readjust the ball or readjust his grip, the Astros knew that he was throwing a fastball, and if he did, they knew he was throwing a cutter or a slider, and got, righteously, let's just say, clubbered during the World Series, and everybody kind of seemingly soured on him a little bit because of that. So, do you think that affected his deal at all? Do you think the Cubs had any hesitation about giving him this deal, or do you think that limited his market or anything like that? Or do you think, this is a case, like I said earlier, of recency bias, where people are letting two bad starts, really bad starts, kind of impact what Darvish has done over the long haul?
Nope, I think that this had basically no effect on either his market or the amount of money that he made. I would be really, really surprised. I mean, you and I are smart baseball analysts, but these front offices are full of smart baseball analysts, and I think they understand that this is a recency bias issue. If you really believe that he was tipping his pitches during the World Series, which I think that there's some credible reporting that says that he might have been, then you could probably see that as a fixable issue, and that would make me less concerned about his postseason performance than I would have been otherwise. But I wouldn't be terribly concerned about it otherwise because, his velocity wasn't down. His mechanics didn't look off. You know, those are the type of things that would concern me if all of a sudden he started falling apart in the playoffs. I would be concerned if it looked like it could be a harbinger of injury. This didn't really seem like it. Sometimes the Astros are just awesome at hitting. Sometimes you might be tipping pitches a little bit, or you might be having some, you know, a little bit of a wear down over the end of the season. I mean, you mentioned before Darvish's workload, and it's interesting that you said that he's got a lot of mileage on his arm, because I kind of look at it the other way. In 6 seasons, he's pitched about 832 innings, not counting the playoffs, which is not a lot of mileage for a pitcher. Part of the reason of that is because he had the UCL tear and the Tommy John surgery. But in 2017, he pitched a lot of innings for Yu Darvish, you know, dating back to since he's been to the U.S., not since he was pitching copious amounts of innings back in Japan. He does have a lot of mileage, but he also is not the most durable. Thanks to his strikeout rate, he doesn't always go deep into games. So maybe you just start wearing down at the end of the season too, and maybe that's what caused him to tip his pitches. Maybe that's what caused him to have some, you know, minor performance issues. Didn't really seem very minor to the Dodgers, but I think in the grand scheme of things, they're more minor. Anyway, I think that front offices pretty much understand this, and I think the front offices are going to be super willing to spend money on Darvish, whether it's a large amount of money or, you know, at least be in the game if you're the Brewers or the Twins, because this is not the type of starting pitcher that comes around very often. And, you know, for all that we're saying about him being an injury risk or his performance going down, he's probably a better bet to pitch well than just about anybody else in baseball, especially the guys who are open on the free market.
Yeah, that's fair. And to be clear, I was referencing in part his figures overseas, because if you look at his, totals, he was throwing 200 inning seasons as a 20-year-old, and as a 21-year-old, and also as a 23 and 24-year-old. And the years I left out, he threw nearly 100 innings as an 18-year-old, nearly 150 innings as a 19-year-old, and then 182 innings as a 22-year-old. So that is a lot of mileage to put on an arm that young. I mean, you compare him to some of his teammates, shoot, I don't think John Lester probably threw a 200 inning season until he was 23, 24 period, whereas Darvish was doing it, what, three or four times, I think I just mentioned, before he was 23, 24. So, there is a significant amount of difference there.
And he was
Another
doing
thing.
it in NPB seasons, which are shorter than MLB seasons. So he's going very deep into games in those games, which I think is even more of a red flag than the raw innings total. So I definitely think you're right there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And for the record, Lester did throw his first 200-inning season as a 24-year-old. So
Oh.
there you go. So I wanted to touch on the Cubs rotation in general too, because I think we both agree that Darvish is a boost to them, and it
Yeah.
looks like now they can run out John Lester, Darvish, Jose Quintanilla, Kyle Hendricks, and Tyler Chatwood. So is this where does this rotation rank among National League teams? Do you have a top five? Top half of a league, or do you have? I don't think there's any way you would say bottom half of the league here. So I'll just say, is it the top three, top five? Is it the best rotation of a National League in your opinion?
Well, just off the cuff, I would say it's probably the best rotation in the National League. The Dodgers have an argument if you are willing to buy that having this kind of depth is going to make up for having this many question marks, because I feel like if everything goes smoothly for the Dodgers, then they're going to have an absolutely killer rotation even without Darvish, because they've got young guys, they've got Rich Hill, they've got Clayton Kershaw. But I think that rotation is riskier than the Cubs rotation. I think on the aggregate, the Cubs rotation is probably the best in the National League. I'd take it over the Diamondbacks, I'd take it over the Nationals, because it's more stable. You have four guys who are pretty much, if they, you know, everything doesn't have to go right for the front four guys in the Cubs rotation to still be incredibly effective. Pretty much everything has to go right for the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks, they have a few more guys who are definitely lower floor guys, you know, guys like Taijuan Walker. It's hard to not be convinced about Robbie Ray yet. I just still feel weird about him in some ways. Robbie Ray, who, by the way, is Pecota projected to be one of the top 10 starting pitchers in baseball next season. The Nationals have a great front end, a lot like the Cubs do, but they are also committed to running AJ Cole out in the fifth spot, and that is a really big red flag, and they don't have a lot of depth behind him. So that's a long way of saying the Cubs rotation is the best in the National League. Not sure yet I want to try to put them up as the best in baseball. I think there are other teams in the American League who definitely I would rate a little bit higher. My first thoughts, the Indians definitely is probably ahead of the Cubs for me. But this is a killer rotation. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I would agree that it's probably the tops of the National League. The Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and Nationals were the other teams I was going to throw out there, and you kind of addressed all of them. And you know, just to know the Nationals, I certainly hope they are not running AJ Cole out there as their fifth starter when the season begins, because they have Edwin Jackson sitting right there. So
Oh,
that mistake. When you include the American League, though, I would throw out potentially the Astros,
yeah.
Potentially the Yankees. I think there's a lot of depth there that kind of can get overlooked. And I guess those would be the teams that I really think are in competition here. But yeah, it's a good looking rotation. You have, you know, the sheer star power of Darvish. You have Lester, who I assume will bounce back a little bit. Maybe, you know, maybe that's fool's gold there, because he's getting close to, I think he just turned 34 years old. And, you know, maybe he is at the end, because he has a lot of mileage too. Quintanilla is obviously very Quintana, excuse me. I always call him Quintanilla. That is not good. But Quintana, he's obviously underrated. Sort of like a younger Lester in a sense. And Hendricks, you know, I dig the changeup guys. So
oh, yeah, that's
I definitely dig him. I'm not as high on Chatwood as seemingly every other member of the Sabermetrics community. However, he's your number five starter. You know, what can you do there? He's fine. That's the number five starter.
I remember us having this exact conversation when Chatwood signed, where you said, well, I'm not as high as on Chatwood as some of the other people. And my response was, I'm even lower on Chatwood than you are. I really don't think that he is going to be some sort of revelation. He's going to all of a sudden go to Chicago and not be in Colorado anymore. And like, oh, he's a mid-rotation starter. He's great now. But I've been wrong about these things before. But, you know, when you look at it from the perspective of all it cost them was money, and they desperately needed depth in that fifth spot, because otherwise it would be, I don't know, Mike Montgomery or
Eddie Butler.
Stop trying to make Eddie Butler happen, man. It's not going to happen. Like, they would be in serious trouble with Eddie Butler out there. But, you know, this is what I'm saying. Like, spending a little bit extra, $21 million over 3 years, to get Chatwood, who maybe has some upside, got no problem with that. You know, if they hadn't gone out and gotten Darvish, if they had gotten Jason Vargas, or they had gotten, you know, a really kind of like a lower to mid-tier free agent starting pitcher to supplement, and Chatwood maybe would have been in the fourth spot, maybe would have been in the fifth spot, I think we could talk about the Chatwood signing a lot differently. But, you know, the Cubs have committed to spending a lot of money this offseason. I mean, the guys they brought in for the bullpen, Darvish and Chatwood in the rotation. This is the one big market team who seems to be, at least right now, going out there and spending the money to improve the holes on the team, which, you know, pretty much entirely were in the pitching staff.
Yeah, and don't forget Chris Jimenez. I mean, that was a big money signing as well.
yeah, he pitched really well for him.
I'm curious to see if he's going to be Darvish's personal catcher or not, because, I don't know, that's interesting to me. It's like Arizona, you know, they use Jeff Mathis as Greinke's personal catcher, and there's something very, I don't want to say amusing to me about, you know, handing these pitchers hundreds of millions of dollars and then entrusting them to guys who, you know, on most teams would be like non-roster invitees or whatever. There's nothing funny in that, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I really think that this Jimenez signing, I really will not be surprised if he is Darvish's kind of personal catcher, and the Cubs carry three catchers on their 25-man with him and Contreras and maybe Victor Caratini. Because,
oh, gosh. I hate three catchers.
See, I don't. I think it's good. I'm really all for it, especially if they're willing to, you know, since they have Jimenez, cut a guy from the bullpen.
They're not going to do that, though. Madden, during his time in Tampa Bay, he loved having three catchers, because, you know, that's a Mike Socha thing. They love that, so they can pinch hit for one catcher. And in addition to that, he loved having extra arms in the bullpen. And, you know, just looking at their bullpen, Moreau is obviously going to be there, so nothing you can do with him. Carl Edwards Jr. has an option left, but he's your second best reliever, I think. I don't think you disagree with that. So he's not going anywhere. And everyone else, and I'm talking about Pedro Strop, Steve Cieszek, Justin Wilson, Justin Grimm, Ryan Dunsing, and Mike Montgomery are all unoptionable. So they have no flexibility with that. So, if they're going to keep all those guys, and I'm not saying they necessarily will, maybe they trade Mike Montgomery, maybe they designate Justin Grimm for assignment, maybe they dump Justin Wilson and decide, you know what, we're going to have enough on Hickey's plate with Chatwood and whomever else you want to throw into that bin. But yeah, they have no real flexibility there. And just to talk about their bench, it's looking like Jimenez LaStella, who has one option left somehow, because it feels like he's been optioned 1,000 times in his career between Atlanta and Chicago. Zobrist is obviously not getting optioned. And then you have Ian Happ. So Happ would seem like the one player there, unless they do something wild and just outright release Hayward or trade Schwarber or something like that, that could be sent down in favor of Caratini. And I don't know if you can even do that, because don't you need Happ and you're around your lineup when you have Almora Jr. and Baez and even to some extent Schwarber? Like, you can see Happ getting some significant playing time, just being slated as a bench player to open the season, I feel like. So, and then again, Zobrist is probably going to get an opportunity for 400 plus plate appearances again to show he's not done. So maybe Happ should start the season in Iowa, and they bring up, I don't even know, I mean, they really don't have any options for that last bench spot. Peter Borges, I mean, that's not good.
Yeah, I actually think this is kind of an easy decision from one perspective. I mean, I kind of agree with you that Zobrist and Happ should be non-starters as far as, they have to be on this bench. They give them enough flexibility that they can run guys out there in lots of different positions. Although I will say, I'm not entirely sure whether or not they want to play Almora every day against tough left-handed or tough right-hand pitchers. Yeah, I mean, you're right that they are kind of screwed in terms of their bench. You almost have to have LaStella, Happ, and Zobrist on this bench. LaStella, kind of, I always get a little bit nervous that this is going to be the year that he stops hitting at that, remarkable clip that's made him so useful to the Cubs over the last couple of years. He always seems like he's going to be the odd man out to me. But this is a team that I really think is designed to have a five-person bench. It would really surprise me not to have that. Now, Caratini, when you talk about, carrying three catchers, Caratini's got plenty of options. So he's the guy that you can use up and down depending on injury. And that's the one thing we're not talking about here is, they could easily have one injury to this roster. And like you said, they don't have a lot of minor league ready to go depth. So if anybody gets injured, maybe Caratini is the first person up, whether it's, Hayward or Baez or anybody. So that's maybe something that we think about. He's really the 26th guy on the 25-man roster. Also, at the same time, I think Justin Grimm's getting DFA'd sooner rather than later. He seems to me at least the odd man out in the bullpen. They definitely, I mean, you could cut ties with Justin Wilson, but I definitely think if you're going to keep Montgomery, you have Brian Dentsing, but you don't want Brian Dentsing to be your first lefty that you use
I
in that
wouldn't,
bullpen
no.
with. So I think they would try to rehabilitate Justin Wilson at least this spring and see if they can get back to having a left-handed setup guy there.
Yeah, and we didn't mention him with the rotation depth, but someone who I really liked in my brief look at him last September was Jinho Singh.
Oh, yeah.
He's a command guy, so you kind of get overlooked because he doesn't have amazing raw stuff, and he's kind of on the small side. He's also right-handed, so you don't necessarily. I mean, if he was left-handed, he'd probably get Jason Vargas comps and be cast as a potential mid-rotation starter, but he's really more probably of a back-end guy. And yeah, I liked what I saw from him. Like, there was definitely some good command there and some intelligence about what he was doing and whatnot. So I don't know if you want to, you probably don't want to open the season with him in your rotation, but there's a chance that if someone gets hurt, he could do a fine job as, your number four or five guy. So we'll see on that front. And that's probably a better option than Eddie Butler, who I did mention earlier, just because I know mentioning Eddie Butler gets Brian riled up. So, but yeah, you're right. It's a, their 25 man roster is basically going to be the best 25 men they have. There's
Yeah.
no, there's no genie waiting in AAA to be unleashed from his bottle that can come in here, really change things. And it's going to be interesting to see how much versatility and how much they can really do at the trade deadline, because a lot of their prospects are a little bit further down in the minors, correct? I mean,
Yeah, I
I'm
mean
trying to think.
their top
They
prospect
have,
is probably Adbert Alzolay, who is a guy that they probably hope is going to step into the rotation at some point next year. I would be very reluctant to imagine that they're willing to deal him, given how much money they have caught up in their rotation right now and how variable I think that could end up being. I mean, one bad injury means that they're really kind of screwed, and there's a chance that you've got guys like Lester and guys like Quintana who are eventually going to be moving out of this rotation. So I'd be very surprised if they wanted to move him. And beyond that, you're looking at guys like Aramis Adamon, who is so far away you need a telescope to see him. And then there's like a couple of other guys, but they're mainly low A dudes at this point. There's not a lot of prospect help nearby. This is, you said that there's no magic bullet in AAA. This is like the first year in 4 years that we can say that about the Cubs. They don't have a good farm system. All they've got to improve this team right now is kind of money and these strong assets. I really wouldn't be surprised that if you see a bounce back season from somebody like Kyle Schwarber or maybe even Addison Russell, the team tries to make a deal and restock a little bit, replenish a little bit. At some point this season to try to kind of drag their window out or have a little bit more depth going forward.
that makes sense. I don't know. That's very gutsy to do that in a season you're trying to win a World Series. But I feel like if anyone can get away with it, it would be Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, because the whole World Series thing kind of bought them a lot of leeway. So
And
yeah,
maybe
that's like the Nate Silver piece a couple years ago. I don't know if you ever read this piece, because I don't know how many people read the piece, but he wrote that some teams are so good they can afford to trade off pieces and still be good. And the idea being, the postseason is mostly a crapshoot, and if you're good enough to make the postseason without, say, in the Cubs' case, say Schwarber, you can trade him, get some prospect depth, and improve your long-term standing while not really affecting your short-term outlook. That seems better in theory than in actuality, because
Yeah,
again,
for
I feel
sure.
like if a competitive team is trading, their seventh best player or whatever, you're going to get some heat for it. So yeah, I think that's probably one of those things where they probably would just wait till next winter rather than
Yeah.
doing it in season. But I do like the idea of trading Russell, or I keep going Schwarber. I don't know if they're even going to trade Schwarber. I just don't, he just doesn't fit the roster. I get that they love the guy, and I get that. It's just, he doesn't really fit for me. And sometimes I guess you just have to go with a not great fit because of reasons beyond, baseball and whatnot. People reasons, those stupid people reasons. Nobody likes people reasons.
I mean,
But
yeah,
yeah.
Schwarber's got exactly the type of personality that seems to meld really well with this front office and the management staff, and he's a quite the lovable dude. So maybe it's Ian Happ. If Happ is really going to be a bench piece for most of this season, maybe he's the guy that they need to move on from. But I really like Ian Happ. If hopefully, if they are going to make a move like this, whether it's during the season or like you said, most likely next off season. They'd really want to get a lot of value back for it and like strong value because otherwise making a move like that really would be a mistake because you can't dramatically hurt your short-term chances if you're a team like the Cubs because you could see a situation where the next rebuild might be coming in 2021 or 2022 and you want to take advantage of the opportunity that you've got now.
Well, that's a scary thought. The Cubs rebuilding again. I do want to focus a little bit more on Happ, because it's funny how we're talking about him sort of as an afterthought. He's 23 years old, and last season in 413 plate appearances, he posted a 114 OPS plus and hit 24 home runs. And oh, by the way, he did that while playing five different positions,
Yeah.
including infield and outfield. And that's like a two-win season in 115 games, and we're just sitting here being like, well, he'll be a bench player. He's a switch hitter too, so I mean, you can add that in. And has top 10 pick pedigree. I think the year he came out, he was considered, if not the best college hitter, but at least one of the best college hitters of that class. And yet, again, we're kind of just addressing him as an afterthought, even though on most other teams where we'd be talking about him as a building block. And I guess that talks about how loaded the Cubs are for position players. And I guess what I'm getting at here is, are we also just kind of underrating Hap's value around the league? Because, I mean, you just mentioned that's a guy you would like to, you could see getting traded, I should say. And I think if I were a team like, say, the Marlins, I don't think there's a match here, but if I were the Marlins, Hap would be a guy I'd definitely be interested in. Or, if I'm another rebuilding team, I'd be interested in Hap. I mean, the Rays. If you're the Rays, why
Oh
wouldn't
man,
you be interested?
he seems to me like a very Rays player, like that the Rays would acquire him and then play him at second base every day and be, say, damn the defense, like just let him hit. The thing about Hap is I'm not sure that I'm undervaluing him. I think he's a really good piece. I kind of think he should be starting for this team, perhaps. If Russell gets off to a slow start this season, running him out at second base and moving Javier Baez to shortstop doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world. I get that you don't want to give up on Addison Russell, and I don't necessarily want to give up on him either, but this dude can really hit and he can really play. The thing that I keep going back to is how unwilling the team was to use him in the playoffs. He kind of went missing during the playoffs, and so my thought isn't so much that around the league people might be down on him, it's that inside the Cubs organization, they might be down on him a little bit. And if that's the case, then it makes sense for them to perhaps move on from him and get somebody they're more willing to use, or they have more faith in, or they like better. Ian Happ can't help your team on the bench.
And I do wonder how much of that is a statement on Hap and how much of that is simply Joe Maddon being loyal to Ben Zobrist,
Sure.
who got like 20 more plate appearances during the postseason than Hap did. And yeah, I don't know, because Maddon, he's a smart guy and obviously he works for a smart organization, but sometimes, he does show more loyalty to guys who have, been his charges and who have produced for him. And very few players have produced more for Joe Maddon than Ben Zobrist. So I wonder if that's a situation where maybe Matt was just too loyal to Zobrist and wasn't willing to flip the switch, even though he had sufficient reason to. I mean, Zobrist was not that good during the regular season at all, didn't really pick it up in the postseason either. And I don't know. I guess that's a question we don't really have an answer to. But yeah, Hap's a nice little piece. And unless we're missing something that's glaring that only people within the Cubs organization or within the industry know, he would seem like a guy who they should hang on to, and who, frankly, they should be able to find a spot for, either in left field or second base, or I don't know, maybe they get crazy and do something else with them. But I feel like those are the two most likely landing spots. And I feel like if he were traded to the Rays, he would quickly become Nick Franklin. So I don't know.
That's a very negative take on Ian Happ's future if he got traded to the Rays. But yeah, I mean, you could easily see some way the Rays and the Cubs could make the Chris Archer discussion focus around Happ and another strong piece, Happ and Adzolay and a third, really interesting piece and that deal getting done at some point, I think. But who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, and the Rays kind of control the starting pitching market now that Darvish is off of it, because you have not only Archer, you have Odorizzi, who I fully expect to be traded. And you know what? I feel like Odorizzi might be a little underrated because he's a perfectly capable number three, number four starter. He's very athletic. Yes, he's coming off a season in which he allowed a lot of home runs, and he's a fly ball guy. So, if the juiced ball is still in play in 2018 and so on, you might have a little concern there. But he's also under cost control. He has a track record of success, and he can stair step with that high fastball and low splitter. And I don't know, I think if I were a team looking for starting pitching, if I were the Brewers, the Twins, even the Orioles and Yankees or whomever else, I would definitely have interest in Odorizzi. And if you gave me a choice between, let me just give you the choice, Odorizzi or Colin McHugh, let's say the acquisition costs are similar.
Well, if the acquisition costs are similar, I would probably go with Colin McHugh.
Ah, you ruined my.
I'm sorry, man, but the thing about Odorizzi is he made a lot of starts last season, but he did not go deep into games. And I think that was partially because he got beat around a little bit, but he only pitched 143 innings, even though he made 28 starts last year, and that doesn't exactly thrill me. Whereas McHugh, I think, he showed some stuff at the end of the season. He's trying to pick up the Brad Peacock breaking ball, which I think is going to be a huge benefit to him. He really kind of came back fairly strong. If you want to look at last year's performance, I think he's slightly, I mean, on a rate basis, he certainly outperformed Odorizzi, but the question is, next year, is he healthy enough? And I think from an age standpoint, they're close to the same age. Oh no, Odorizzi is much younger than I thought he was, so maybe that's worth taking back. He's going into his age 28 season, where McHugh is, I think, entering his age
30.
31. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Odorizzi's been around forever. I
Yeah,
mean, he
I'm
literally
shocked.
debuted as a 22-year-old, and then he was in the Rays full-time rotation at 24. So I will say, in Odorizzi's defense, though, some of the inning stuff is because of how the Rays run their
Oh, sure.
staff.
No question.
Yeah. So he didn't perform, like, we're talking about him like he had a horrible year. And he did allow a lot of home runs, and he did walk more batters than usual. He still finished with a 100 ERA plus. I know the FIP wasn't pretty at all, but I mean, from a surface level perspective, he wasn't as bad as I think we could cast him here because, I don't
That's
know.
true. I don't think he was as bad as you could cast him as. Do you know what McHugh's ERA plus was last year?
It's probably like 112.
Yeah, it's
Because I was
huge. He
just
had
on
an
his
ERA.
page. Yeah,
He had an ERA of 3.355, and yeah, again, much like Odorizzi, he wasn't used very long when he was starting. He only had 60 plus innings despite starting 12 games. So, they're very similar in certain ways. I mean, actually, if you look at the peripherals, they were very similar last year. He gave up a ton of fly balls, just like Odorizzi did. He struck out about the same amount of guys as Odorizzi. He just managed to be a lot more effective in that in terms of runs allowed, and didn't quite give up as many dingers and walk quite as many guys as Odorizzi. But yeah, I think those are the two interesting guys there, and I think both those guys definitely get traded before the start of the season, or at least early in the season, because in McHugh's case, he doesn't really have a great role with the Astros, and the Astros have enough depth that he's kind of fungible at this point. And in Odorizzi's case, I cannot imagine that the Rays want to pay his salary for next year.
No, his arbitration hearing is literally today, and he'll probably be making like, I think it's like 6 million plus. That's off the top of my head, so I could be off there. And with the Astros, the funny thing, we're talking about the Cubs and how, they could possibly trade to reload a little bit. What do you even ask for if you're the Astros, if you're trying to trade Colin McHugh? Like, what could you possibly want in a trade talks right now? Because you look at the roster, and obviously the rotation has Verlander, Keuchel, Cole. It's still weird to say Cole, by the way.
Yeah, it
I'm
is.
not quite, yeah, I'm not in that mindset yet where I realize that Gerrit Cole is a member of the Houston Astros. And then you have, oh yeah, Charlie Morton, who literally closed out the World Series for you, and Lance McCullers, who, I mean, at times McCullers looks like, I don't want to say necessarily a frontline guy, but pretty close to a frontline guy, at least in stuff. And I know there's there's some reason to doubt that he's ever going to be a full-time frontline guy, but wow. If he's your number five starter, ooh. And then in the bullpen, you have Giles Davinsky. They signed Joe Smith. Will Harris is obviously back. They signed Hector Rondon, too, which is an interesting upside play. Brad Peacock, who you just talked about. Tony Sipp, who got a couple years, a few, what, 2 seasons ago, 2 off-seasons ago, because he was really good. Then McHugh, that doesn't even take into account some of the other non-roster guys or prospects who could, in theory, make the jump, like Marchez and Paulino. Even James Hoyt, who I know a few years back they were really high on when they got him from Atlanta. And I mean, shoot, we're not even talking about the potential for Forrest Whitley to maybe work his way up into this rotation of the next year or so. That is a loaded pitching staff, and the lineup is loaded. Like, I don't have to go through the entire lineup. So
Yeah.
what do you ask for? Do you ask for
Well,
a prospect here?
I think the team could use a good bench piece, quite honestly. Somebody who can play some infield and be a solid bench piece. I mean, it would be nice to get a J.A. Happ, not J. Happ,
Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, type player who could fill in. You don't think of the Astros needing infield depth because their infield is so good, but having a bat who could also be a substitute in the infield, the guy who could pinch hit, and then occasionally give somebody like Correa or Altuve a day off without crippling the team's offense, I think that would be a good fit. I'll get a little weird and I'll say that
Hit
JT
me.
Realmuto from the Marlins. I know Brian McCann is there. I know Evan Gattis is there. I think if you could move McHugh and, one of the team's good young prospects, I'm not sure I'd be willing to go with Kyle Tucker or Forrest Whitley, but Bukauskas and another guy and another guy and get JT Realmuto in. I think that would be an upgrade. I
I agree
just
with that.
You're right. And then the only other thing is I always look at the bullpen, and you can always use another lights out relief pitcher. You can no matter what. And I honestly thought the Astros were going to be in the market for somebody like a Wade Davis or one of the top tier relief options that was available in the free agent market just because of how the postseason went, and they didn't have a lot of faith in their relief core. They don't really need to, and they went out and got Joe Smith, but I still think that if you have the opportunity to get a really top-end relief arm, maybe that's the guy that you move McHugh for, or a guy with a high strikeout rate who's in a setup role. It's
That
interesting though,
makes
like
sense.
I don't know who that would be with the fits for McHugh. Like maybe getting somebody like Trevor Hildenberger from the Twins would be a good fit. Maybe I don't know, but that seems light in terms of a return for McHugh, I guess.
Yeah, and I was going to throw out, just separate of McHugh, you could try to trade for Alex Colomé since he seems like he would be
Yeah.
available as well. But, I don't know what the fit would be. Then again, it's not like the Rays are going to be that picky at this point, I don't think. And yeah, the Astros also have Derek Fisher who they can slot into the outfield. So we don't necessarily have to connect them to any outfielders if they don't want to go that route. And that gives you Marwin Gonzalez back in sort of a reserve role, right? If
Yeah,
you do that. So that kind of fills in.
that's the thing. Maybe moving Marwin Gonzalez into like kind of that super sub role as opposed to the everyday left fielder. So maybe it's a left fielder that I would want to get because that would allow you to use Gonzalez in that role that I was talking about as an infielder. So let me just quickly do the math on corner outfielder that you could get for Colin McHugh. All right, so the Blue Jays. Maybe you bring in, I don't know, somebody like. What about Kevin Pillar?
What about him?
I don't know. That would be kind of interesting, I think. I could just imagine a Pillar Springer Reddick outfield and where fly balls go to die, but maybe that's too much of a hit to the offense. I don't know. This is a tough one. You could maybe see a move where you would get somebody from.
I think I have a fit, but I don't know if it's likely. I was going to say that the Cardinals or the Nationals, they have, Goodwin, Taylor. I don't think they would give either of those guys up for McHugh. Well, maybe Goodwin. I don't know
Yeah,
how
I
high
could
they
see them
are
giving up
now.
Goodwin or
With the
Taylor either.
Cardinals, though, I mean, they have so much outfield depth. They already dealt Grichuk, but maybe, someone like Bader. I don't know. I don't know if he's better than Fisher, honestly. So they might just go with Fisher. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's some options out there. It can certainly get interesting if
All right.
the Astros do shop him aggressively. So
I gotcha. I
hit
got
me.
my move I want to see. If they eat the whole salary, you trade McHugh to the Dodgers for Matt Kemp. That's
Oh,
my
that would
move.
be. That's like testing clubhouse chemistry to the
Yeah,
fullest extent there.
the Astros have that beautiful clubhouse chemistry. They've got good leadership. They always seem to want to bring in a veteran kind of guy. I don't think Matt Kemp is the veteran guy that they have in mind, but yeah, that's my move. Makes very little sense, and I like it very much.
I mean, I'm trying to think of how we would all react if they went out and traded Matt for Matt Kemp right now, and how Matt Kemp would react if he was told he's traded to the Astros. Like, would he be thrilled because, oh, I have a chance at a World Series ring, or would he be like, great, I'm not going to get to play?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That would be kind of interesting. It's just hard to think of a good fit. You wouldn't think they would want to bring in somebody like in the Orioles, because the Orioles could use a starter as badly as any team, but like who would they bring in exchange for that? You don't think they would. The Astros don't have
Joey
any.
Ricard.
I'm sorry?
Joey Ricard.
Yeah, like the Astros don't want Mark Trumbo. That's not a thing. Yeah, it's a tough. But boy, it's surprisingly tough to try to make the fit. Oh, how about the Phillies? The Phillies
How
could
about that?
probably they have a surplus of outfielders at this point. Maybe that's the Nick Williams or I don't know, you jack up the deal a little bit and try to pry Aaron Altherr loose, although I doubt the Phillies would be open to moving him.
Yeah, I don't think the Phillies would do either of those. I think they would just try to develop their own McHugh with some of the younger arms they have. And also, I don't think they're close enough to contention to justify that kind of move just yet. But I do feel like the Orioles make plenty of sense. I don't know who they would trade for him. Maybe it's a prospect. I don't know. But of course, the Orioles don't necessarily have a ton of prospects either. So they do make sense because, I mean, you look at their rotation. I think we talked about them recently. It's Dylan Bundy, Gosman, Gabby Gano, Mike Wright, and then Miguel Castro. And yeah, they need at least one, probably two starters. I do appreciate, though, that they have a Jose Mesa on their roster. So I know I made that joke before, I'm pretty sure, but I do appreciate that still.
So maybe McHugh and one or two prospect pieces, and that's what brings Zach Britton out of Baltimore and into that bullpen. And then the Orioles go out and they trade for McHugh, who has too many strikeouts for the Orioles, but still might be an okay fit. And then they go sign Andrew Cashner and call it an offseason.
I mean, that would make the Orioles a fair amount better, wouldn't it? I feel like that makes them a fair amount better.
I'm really concerned about Zach Britton's long-term future, so I do think it would make the Orioles better. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of an interesting thought. All right, so yeah, McHugh's a good fit. I mean, if they're at it, we might as well just swap Bregman out for Machado and call it a day.
Yeah. I mean, Bregman's not that good anyway. He's only like, what, the fifth best player on the Astros, fourth best player on the Astros.
Yeah,
Those guys are totally fungible.
He's the third best infielder on the team, so you might as well move on from him.
Yeah. And he's old too. He's like, what, 23, 24?
No, ancient. Why? The move from him to Machado would actually not be as much of an improvement as you'd think it might be. But it would be really interesting to add Machado to Correa and Altuve. That's just me wanting to see the world's greatest infield, which they probably already have. So I guess it's not much of a change.
Well, way to sabotage your own point there. So
Yeah,
very
right.
good.
Boy, we did take a little bit of a walk from Yu Darvish to the Astros here.
I don't even remember how we got on this. I think we were talking about loaded teams, and I threw. Oh, we were talking about the starting pitching market, and I
That's right,
threw
that's right.
McHugh in there, and you completely derailed my point from there because I was trying to make this the Jake Odorizzi fan club hour, and you ruined that by saying you'd rather have Colin McHugh.
That's
So
right, that's
it's
right.
an all rhyming day here, you and McHugh.
So I'll give it one more, not necessarily the realm of speculation, but with Darvish off the market, that leaves a couple of the teams who were talking about being in contention for him, or at least interested in a player of his caliber, the Dodgers, the Brewers, the Twins. I don't really think the Yankees were really in it, but do you have a feel for where some of these other teams that missed out on Yu Darvish might try to turn their attention in the future? I mean, the easy thing to say is, well, if you miss out on Yu Darvish, you probably bid for Jake Arrieta. And if you miss out on Jake Arrieta, you probably bid on Alex Cobb. But do you think that there's any specifics that you see or kind of tacks you think these other teams should take going forward?
I think it's just the guessing game at that point. But I will say, the Brewers have a fair amount of race connects within the front office, so it wouldn't surprise me too much if Cobb were to land there, just based on because when you're getting Cobb, you're getting more than just a good pitcher. You're also getting a guy who is well regarded as a leader type. And I don't know if they necessarily needed that with the rotation. I'm not going to sit here and claim to have great insight into whether they have a leader type already on the rotation. But I feel like that's the kind of appeal that might serve as a tiebreaker if you consider Lynn, on the same tier and some of the trade options on the same tier a little lower. I don't know if they're going to go after Arrieta because it seems like his financial demands might be similar to Darvish's. And if they weren't able to land him, then they're probably not going to land Arrieta. Although, with the Cubs being out of the market, and if the Yankees are indeed out of the market, you're talking about with the Dodgers, and that's not even a given because they seem like they want to stay under the luxury tax number. So, maybe they do get Arrieta, but I don't know. I would throw Cobb in there because I think the connection there might sell them on Cobb in a way that they wouldn't be sold on any of the other guys. But I could be wrong because Derek Johnson worked with the Cubs organization for a few years, so maybe they do get Arrieta based on his recommendation or something. I just have a hard time by believing that's the most likely scenario for them. The Twins, I don't know, man. I mean, Maybe they splurge and get Arrieta. That would be pretty fun, honestly, if they were to go out and get Arrieta.
I don't see it though, because I think that if the
Oh.
Twins were willing to spend that kind of money, they might have been able to snag Darvish away from the Cubs. I mean, I don't know if the Cubs' offer was literally just the most expensive offer, or if it was something more along the lines of Darvish would much rather pitch in Chicago rather than Minnesota. But I would think that if the Twins are historically so reluctant to hand out long-term big money contracts, that it would shock me that they would not go that mile to get Darvish, but then be like, okay, Jake Arrieta, we got that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And where does Arrieta land while we're on the speculative part of the show?
I mean, honestly, I am kind of lost. The teams that could handle a big payroll increase, who would be willing to commit to a pitcher like Arrieta for what I assume is going to be something along $20 million a season, something around 5 years, there just aren't a lot of teams who will say that, oh yeah, we can afford to do that, especially given the market.
Or it's gonna have to get in touch with the learners again and sell the Nationals on them, it seems like.
I mean, it may be something like that. That would not shock me, especially talking about AJ Cole as the number fifth starter there, and then I think we have to relitigate the who's the best rotation in the National League discussion if the Nationals brought in Arrieta. Here's the one team that I see being a fit, and I talked about them really briefly before, the Phillies.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I would also throw, just looking through the teams, I think you'd have to say that the Angels would make some sense. I doubt they're going to do it. The Twins we already discussed. The Yankees seem unlikely at this point. The
So let
Mariners would make a ton of sense, but I don't know if they have the money.
So here's a team that I think might have the money that always slow plays the market, but because of who the team is, I think it's a 0% chance. He is a perfect fit for the Orioles if the Orioles are taking
Oh,
this
yeah.
seriously, but there is no way he goes back to Baltimore.
You would think not, no. I would also throw with the Giants strike, I don't know if they have the money, but they would make a lot of sense.
They would. I just can't imagine with all the money they've spent to bring in Longoria and to bring in McCutcheon that they could really afford to do that. But I mean, Giants love their old
Power
ass
arms.
team, you know?
Can you, I mean, look at those. You know who's their number four and number five starters right now? It's Ty Block and Chris Stratton. That's not going to get it done. I don't know if any team would benefit more from adding a guy like Arrieta than the Giants at this point. I know they have Tyler Beede and Andrew Suarez is not that far away, but and they brought in Derek Holland, who we'll talk about next episode. But yeah, I don't know. I'm starting to like him for the Giants a lot more than I did 5 minutes ago, just because I
Yeah,
am, though. I am.
if you're going to talk about no team can benefit more than the Giants, especially considering they're kind of on that cusp of contention, wild card team plus kind of thing. That's why I don't think, the Orioles and the Phillies, he would obviously be an even bigger upgrade, but I don't think on the win curve it would shift too much. The Giants, you're absolutely right, and the Angels. I think those are the two teams where he would make the biggest difference in terms of, if you want to start talking about championship win probability added, those are the two teams. And then maybe the Twins are kind of in that boat. But yeah, the Twins, I don't think can afford them. The Giants, I don't think can afford them. The Angels, I don't think can afford them. And we're saying can't afford him. Like, these teams all definitely could make the move to get him, but I think that they are taking the position of we cannot afford them. There's nothing sillier than saying that a team cannot afford a $20 million player because they all can.
Brian Grosnick, are you suggesting teams are making profits?
I've been known to do that in the
It's
past.
only a $10 billion industry. There's no reason to believe these teams are making profits, Brian.
I know, I know. Man, I am just shocked to see how many free agents are still available, and I'm just trying to figure out what some of these contracts are going to look like for guys like Jeremy Hellickson or
Oh,
Andrew
God.
Kapschner. We are on the border of these guys getting like minor league deals and stuff. At this point, it would not shock me if, like, okay, we keep joking about the Orioles signing Andrew Kapschner, but what kind of contract does he get at this point from the Orioles? Do they give him like one and two?
It's going to be something very low, it seems like, yeah.
And at the beginning of the offseason, we were kind of like projecting, like, oh, Andrew Kapschner is terrible, but he'll get 2 years and 10 million. or he'll get, something substantial. And like, we just have so many teams that have these big glaring holes in the rotation, so many available free agents, and none of them seem to be willing to budge. So I just wonder if we're going to see a bunch of like really small, short contracts for these players.
I feel like Helixson might get a minor league deal. Actually, Kashner at least has the shiny ERA to prop him up, where he probably will get a major league deal because of that. Because, I mean, has there ever been a guy in the history of the game to have a ERA plus of like 138 over 160 plus innings who had to settle for a minor league deal? Because I feel like no. I feel like that, you're that far above the league average ERA. Even though it's all smoke and mirrors based on his peripherals, you probably get a major league deal from that just. Because, I mean, there has to be some level where the bottom line performance tops the secondary metrics or what have you. And I also know his FIP actually went down from 2016, which
That's
is
true.
probably not an encouraging sign, honestly. But the Rangers also had something weird where all of their starting pitchers, beyond you, obviously, weren't able to strike anyone out. So I wonder if it's a philosophical thing under Doug Rakow that perhaps we're not accounting for. Not that I would want to sign Andrew Kashner
I was going to
or
say,
rely on him, but
if he rebounds to his previous level of strikeout performance, it's still not good given the rest of his
no.
skill set. But if you think that, the 4.6 strikeouts per nine are not exactly what's going to be coming in the future, he still gets a major league deal. He threw over 160 innings. He didn't give up runs. He has to get some sort of major league deal, you'd think, but I mean, at this point, like, who gives it to him? That's the question. And with the market seem, we say the market is flooded with pitchers because there are so many available, but literally every team needs a fifth starter at this point, with the exception of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, and I don't know where they're going to get all these deals, and I don't know when they're going to happen. We're literally days from pitchers and catchers reporting, and it's not pretty. It's really not. Ugh.
I think we're going to see a lot of these deals start to get signed at the beginning of March when pitching coaches and front office folks are, looking at the pitchers starting to get warm and starting to pick things up, and you see that, pitcher X has lost 2 miles per hour off their fastball and isn't looking like they did last year in spring training, and they say, okay, we'll bite the bullet and we'll sign, I don't know, Jason Vargas to a 2-year deal and get him in here and somebody else we can rely on. Or if, the Mets, decide that Zach Wheeler injecting bone growth serum into his stomach for 6 months, like was just reported, is probably a bad thing, even when it comes to the Mets' medical woes, then maybe they'll decide that, hey, we can afford to go out and get just another live arm, but I don't think that'll be until like the start of March.
All right, that's almost a month more of shows. We can't have that. Like we're not gonna make it to episode 60 in the straight because we have to do another.
We're gonna get a drip of these. I think we're gonna get like one decent, quote, top tier free agent signing like about every week, and then I do think that the next domino to fall is gonna be Jake Arrieta, because he's not going to make it to April. I think Arrieta, Lynn, and Cobb, we're gonna start to see go in the next couple of weeks. Because I don't think they want to leave too much time, and I do think there are teams that will pay for these kinds of talents. I just, at this point, I have no idea which one it's going to be.
Yeah, and the Darvish deal should, in theory, suppress the market a little bit for the team's benefit, to be clear, not the player's benefit. So it's kind of hard to argue that you want 150 million guaranteed when the top free agent starting pitcher got 126 or whatever it was. And I guess that's, basically what teams wanted. So in that sense, the Darvish deal is a win for everyone, but especially a win for the Chicago Cubs.
It is certainly not a deal, not a win for Jake Arrieta. Like, can you imagine any possibility of Arrieta getting 20 million a year at this point after this Darvish deal, where he only gets 21 million? Like, I can't see that at all. So now you're looking at Arrieta making like, I don't know, 16 or 17 million a year on a 5-year deal or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if someone would give him 20 million. I was thinking maybe he would, get that 1 million less a year or whatever. And yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious now to see what he gets. And I'm kind of afraid too. I'm afraid that he's going to get, even less than we're talking about here. Maybe Yeah, maybe in that 16 to 18 million range, and that's not really what I anticipated at all entering the winter. And I mean, if he ends up below the qualifying offer, that's completely bogus, and that tells you right there that
Yeah.
there's some shaky and shady stuff going on behind the scenes, because that's not right. He, again, I don't know if I want to bet on him for 5 years, because I am conservative in these things in general, but he has the track record, he has the stuff, he has the body, he takes care of himself as well as seemingly any starting pitcher takes care of himself. And you can say, well, maybe he's too tight, maybe he has not enough flexibility, maybe he's going to keep hurting his hamstring or his quad or whatever. But come on, like that, if you just laid it out there and you said this guy has top line stuff, he takes care of his body like he's a bodybuilder or what have you, and he's got the performance to speak of, he's pitching the postseason with a World Series champion, he's basically everything on paper you would want in a frontline starter. So it's hard for me to believe that teams out there are really nitpicking him to the extent that they're believing he's worth less than, say, the average, what, top 125 salaries or what have you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts. And it just goes to show how absurd this offseason is, where we're sitting here nitpicking these players to this extent and coming up with things like, he has too many muscles or whatever.
Right.
So.
If you would have told me before this offseason that, like, oh, Jake Arrieta might end up signing somewhere for, like, I don't know, 480 or something like that. If he wants the higher average annual value, maybe he wants to go, 4 years, and then I could see a team giving him 480. I could see a team giving him 5 and 90 and change and something like that. And let me tell you, going into this offseason, I can't think of a single team that would be like, oh yeah, we made a mistake here. We can't get Arrieta for, I mean, that kind of price for a pitcher of Jake Arrieta's caliber. I know nobody's real excited about him after age of 35 or something like that, but that is a wildly valuable contract in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he could leave after a year and go join a monastery, and even if you were still paying him, you'd be happy with that deal. Are you kidding me? That's
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I think you're going to see a lot of teams have some really weird buyer's remorse this year. Either they signed somebody to a contract last year that they regret, or they signed somebody to a contract earlier in this offseason. I mean, imagine that you're the Cubs probably aren't going to be in this situation, but if you were the Cubs and instead of signing, Tyler Chatwood and Brandon Morrow, you could have had Jake Arrieta back as your fifth starter for roughly the same price as those two guys. I mean, that's, I would have some buyer's remorse over that. That would be kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Ugh. One of these days we're gonna do a happy show, people, but it's not today, so.
Well, I am happy that Yu Darvish signed. I am always the I tend to be the optimistic guy on this, and I'm happy that Yu Darvish signed. I'm kind of happy to see the Cubs get stronger, not because I have any, strong ties to watching the Cubs win another World Series, but I am one of the folks who thinks that it's always better when you have teams that are really, really great. One, you get to root for history making, and two, you get to root for the underdogs who knock them off. And so that's why I'm all for the Cubs being, Pecota projected to win 95 to 100 games or whatever it is they are now. Because I think it would be so much sweeter than if the Brewers managed to win the NL Central or, some team comes out of the wild card to knock them off. So I'm 100% for this. Plus, we don't have to worry about Yu Darvish not pitching in April, which is no fun.
That's fair. Although I would say I'm more in favor of teams coming out of nowhere, because I don't like the fundamental assumption that we have a good grasp on what's going to happen. So I like Milwaukee, I like Arizona and Colorado and all those teams. Like, I would be totally good if the Dodgers and or Cubs missed the postseason, just to shake things up, just to put us on our heels a little bit and say, oh wow, what did we miss here? What can we learn from this or what have you? Plus, I mean, it'd be funny if the Giants were to win the National League West with that roster after we all spent a couple of months in season and then during the off season kind of proclaiming that, the sky is falling on San Francisco, they're too old to make another run and blah blah blah. And then, Andrew McCutchen and Evan Longoria play like they're 28 again, and all of a sudden, the Giants are in the NLCS against the, I guess it would be the Nationals or Cubs or whomever at that point. And that'd be fun, right? It
Oh,
would
it
be
would be
fun.
super fun. I have Giants fatigue stemming back to their early decade dynasty, but
Yeah.
let me tell you, the addition of guys like Longoria and McCutchen to that team makes me super excited to watch Giants baseball this year and to see if they can really make a run at it, which I think says something about their strategy. I mean, they've always kind of had this counter sabermetric strategy, and they got crushed for it in the first decade of the millennium because, people were crazy about, oh, Brian Sabian's bringing in all these guys who are, spending a lot of money on free agents who are not particularly projected to play very well. And sure enough, some of those moves ended up being, the right complementary pieces to the pieces that he was developing in, Bumgarner, Posey, and Sandoval, and those guys. And so I think the narrative has changed a lot about the Giants, but I also think my opinion on, what makes for fun baseball to watch and, being a little more player centric and seeing some of the personalities and seeing some of the favorite guys, and these are a lot of fun guys to watch. So I would be thrilled if the Giants were to beat the sabermetric juggernaut that is the Dodgers in the National League West this year, even though I'd still consider myself a very analytics heavy writer and analyst.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I agree. And anything that keeps the Nathan Perez's around a little longer is good by me. So,
Well, let's leave it at that. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. If you want more DFA podcast content, you can find us on Twitter at DFA Podcast. Hopefully, you'll be able to find both this episode and our previous episode about Todd Frazier very shortly. One is slightly more important than the other, but get pumped for that too. We also have you can contact us via email at DFAPodcast@baseballprospectus.com. If you are just desperately in need for more transaction content, you can check out transaction analysis columns at Baseball Prospectus that are wonderfully well written by a brilliant writer by the name of Brian Grosnick. You can also check out more brilliant commentary and analysis on CBS Sports. RJ is handling a lot of the not trades that are happening right now, but he's writing a lot of wonderful stuff over at CBS Sports, so check that out as well. RJ, anything in particular you want to plug these days, or is the dark days of no baseball that are finally coming to an end, is that something that we will be looking forward to in the future?
I work independent of the schedule, Brian. No, I don't have anything to plug yet. I would say that Matt Snyder, my colleague, wrote an interesting piece on the history of the two strike bunt rule that I thought was kind of cool. So I would recommend checking that out. But I should have something fairly soonish that people may or may not want to read. I don't know. I don't know what people want. If I knew what people want, you would see a totally different outlook for me because, I'm the guy who talks about wanting to write a haunted hotel piece. So I am clearly on the fringe, Brian, in multiple senses, really.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I think you also undersell how good and how interesting your content is. But I say that often, so the listeners don't need to hear that again, but it's true. So thank you all for listening, and we will hopefully be in touch with you soon, right after Jake Arrieta signs a big contract, which hopefully will happen right after we go off the air. So take care, keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see you next time.